Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. School boards across the state are grappling with the requirements of Act 46, the state's new school district consolidation law. Some lawmakers are calling for major changes to the law when the legislature returns to Montpelier in January. Governor Peter Shumlin thinks the new law is working well and might only need some minor tweaks during the session.
What I say is fantastic. We finally have locally controlled school boards and communities sitting down talking about how we build a system that serves students better and reduces property taxes over time. This is a huge victory. Do not throw the baby out with the bathwater if it needs some individual tweaks.
Should Act 46 be changed to reflect concerns about its variable spending cap? And is it fair to say that Act 46 restricts school choice for towns that currently tuition their students? These are just some of the questions we have for our guest today, and there are two people who will be directly involved in the upcoming legislative debate, House Education Chairman David Sharp and Stowe Representative Heidi Sherman. Great to have you both here today. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Bob.
So, Representative Sharp, just to start us off, before we get into the details of Act 46 and possible changes to this law that might be considered in January, tell us the motivation that your committee had to pass this law. What are the factors, what are the considerations that you feel led to the point where the committee said, you know, we got to do something?
So I think that there were two pieces to that. One was when I knocked on doors in my district, I heard a lot of concern about property taxes and the pressure across the state on people's wallets. Wages have not increased significantly, even though we've come out of the Great Recession. Jobs aren't as good as they used to be, and people have to pay taxes out of their back pockets. The other piece was that we have come a long way with Act 60 and 68 with regard to financing equity across the state. Our state constitution requires equitable education for our students, and it requires that we educate all the students in the state. So the legislature, whether it likes it or not, is responsible for the education, overseeing the education of our students. And although we've reached some level of equity with regard to finance resources for students, we have a long way to go with regard to educational opportunities. There are students in some school districts that just don't have the opportunities that students in other school districts have.
So you can actually look at examples of school districts. I noticed the other day that about a third of Vermont school districts have fewer than 100 students. Can you look at school districts and say clearly, here's a district that doesn't have the same educational opportunities as another district?
Sure. So the secretary has a great presentation that demonstrates that. Personally, I met with the president of UVM, and UVM has this fantastic program where the valedictorian of any high school gets a free ride at UVM. And there was a valedictorian that didn't even apply. And the president wondered, you know, why is that? And investigated it and found that the school that that student went to did not offer the courses required by the university to enter the university. So they would not qualify for entry into the university simply because the high school that this student went to didn't offer the courses required.
So if I understand Act 46, school districts have 2 years really to merge if they have fewer than 900 students. The goal is to get to 900 students in every district. What happens to a smaller district that feels it is providing the kind of educational opportunities that you talk about, and they don't feel merging with another district is really necessary? Can they hang out there on their own?
So there's three levels of creating larger school districts that's in the bill. One is the preferred method where like communities come together quickly and form a larger school district of 900 or more students. Secondly is the conventional merger process, which is already in law that Chittenden East took advantage of, and so did the Mountain Red down in the southern part of the state. And then thirdly, alternative structures. So if there are communities that come up with alternative structures that make sense for their region, they're welcome to submit that to the State Board of Education that has the final say.
So you mentioned at the outset two goals. One was property tax burdens. The other was increasing educational opportunities across the state. There are some people who say, you know, this bill is not going to have much impact on property tax burdens, you know, nibbling at the edges, 3-4%, maybe 5% through administrative savings. Are those folks wrong?
So Chittenden East, even though they were not able to form a single larger school district, they kept the supervisory union structure. All the towns except Huntington joined in that larger school district, and they expect nearly $500,000 savings on an annual basis. Chittenden Central Supervisory Union just voted last election day that they would form a single district, and they expect $1 million savings on an annual basis. The big difference between those two is that in the case of Essex, they combined two supervisory unions. So two superintendents will be replaced by one superintendent. So there's greater administrative savings in the Chittenden Central District. It's really exciting news out of Huntington. They have looked at Act 46, and they have seen the success of saving the small school in Bolton, and they're going to re-vote again on town meeting day whether they want to join the Chittenden East Supervisory District and become a single large school district.
Today in the program, we're looking at Act 46. That's the state's new school district consolidation law. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Your thoughts about Act 46. As Vermont's student population declines, are steps needed to encourage the development of larger school districts? Will Act 46 actually help reduce property tax burdens, or will it really help expand educational opportunities, or perhaps none of the above? Your thoughts about this, 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net, but better still, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Representative Sherman, in the last 15 years, Vermont's lost, what, 20% of its school population, really not a decreasing size in terms of staff and schools. As you look at Act 46, what are your biggest concerns?
So thank you, Bob. I guess I will say two things. The declining enrollment in population is a bigger demographic issue than just schools. It's the demographics of our state, and that does need to be addressed. It's one of the biggest issues I think that the legislature and our state has to address to ensure that we have a growing population and that young professionals earn in here. And that is an issue that we have to address in order to do that. But Act 46 itself, after hearing Representative Sharp throughout the year, last year, and throughout this summer, and watching, I think it's flawed. I believe, and I have believed that since the beginning. I think it's flawed in a number of ways. All good intentions from the committee and from legislative leadership and the administration, but the forcing the elimination of local school districts and school boards, I think, is troublesome. I think the wiping out of the school choice, the long tradition of school choice that many of our 90-plus communities currently enjoy, I think is troublesome. I think the spending cap is troublesome. And I know they don't call it a cap, but it essentially is, because it puts in place some real tax penalties if you don't do it. But it is, in my view, unconstitutional in the view of the ACLU. So I think that needs to be addressed. I think we have spent a long time talking about education reform, and in that conversation, we've been very careful to say we're going to adhere to the Brigham decision, and I don't think this does that. I think it was developed, Act 46 was developed on the premise that consolidation will allow for more cost-effective educational outcomes. I don't think there's evidence to support that necessarily. It does nothing, contrary, I think, to what Representative Sharp says, it does nothing to alleviate property taxes throughout Vermont in the short term, possibly in the long term, but again, we don't know that. My main objection to the bill, though, is that for many years we have slowly but surely taken more power and control over the education of our students and put it in the hands of the state. And I think the legislature used this past year the distress that Vermonters are feeling with regard to property taxes to continue that, to further consolidate more power over the education of our students in the hands of the state. And I think that that is not the direction in which we should be going, and we should be going in the opposite direction, giving more flexibility and more more power over the education and our local decision-making to the locals. I think they know better the needs of our students and how to address those needs than the people in Montpelier.
So would you basically support a continuation of the status quo?
No. In fact, I do believe that a real education transformation needs to happen. But this, we changed the discussion this year in 2014, and the campaign throughout 2014, there was uproar about property taxes. This is a consolidation bill. This does nothing to change the funding system, and in my view, it is the funding system that has encouraged the spending growth. Prior to 1997, we spent $650 or $700 million on education. Right now, we spend $1.5 billion. That's almost 100% increase since that time. And I think the funding system is the issue that needs to be addressed in order to reconnect taxpayers to the budgets they vote on and to the money spent, and reconnect taxpayers to the outcomes that are achieved. And that is where I think our reform should go. In addition I think it needs to be more comprehensive, our reform. It needs to address funding and the delivery and structure of education to allow for more flexibility and more authority at the local in the hands of the locals.
So we looked at numerous suggestions. The speaker invited suggestions and got nearly 100. He also put together a summer study committee that considered options. Many of them, most of them, involved larger school districts. Representative Sherman's proposal mandated from the state, used the heavy hand of the state to require supervisory unions the size of tech centers. So in my region, that's a countywide school district supervisory union. And that that the taxes would be raised, we'd return to the foundation system where the local taxes would be raised in local communities, and the difference to supposedly make up the equity of funding would be subsidized out of the state dollars. So I think that that proposal is flawed, and certainly against the Brigham decision, and furthermore, didn't get any support even in her own party.
Let's look at this spending threshold, spending cap, whatever we want to call it. Basically what it says, if I understand it correctly, it says that towns that have high per pupil spending, let's say $15,000, $16,000, $17,000 per pupil per year, their budgets in terms of per pupil spending will increase somewhere between 0.5% and about 1% or 1.5%. And then as you go down to the lower spending per pupil towns, people who are down around $10,000, $11,000, $12,000 per pupil, the spending per pupil can increase maybe 2%, 3%, 4%. Representative Sharp, there's been a lot of criticism of these spending thresholds, and the problem is if towns go over it, there's a really severe penalty. I think for almost every dollar they raise, there's a dollar in penalty. As you look at it now, are you willing to reconsider how these spending thresholds / caps work, to modify them in some way?
Yes, and the speaker has indicated that he's willing to look at the problems. People across the state have raised some legitimate concerns, and my biggest concern is if the purpose was to suppress education spending and give tax relief to Vermonters. So if it's not going to do that, if school districts are going to spend over the threshold and, in fact, taxes on their citizens are going to go up, then it's not serving its purpose. And secondly, the goal was to really reduce staff. We know that despite the fact that we've lost nearly 20% of our students, we have the same number of professional and paraprofessional staff in our schools as we had a decade ago. And it may not have the effect of doing that. In particular, school districts who have been doing that and right-sizing their staff as they've gone along and kept their spending low, they're actually under greater pressure than school districts who have not right-sized their staff and are spending $20,000 or plus per student. And so there are some problems, and we're actually meeting at the State House, and people are welcome to come. We've reserved room 11, so we'll have plenty of space for people to come and hear some testimony on how we might change the high spending threshold. And in particular, how we might get at ratios more directly to have school districts right-size their staff so that we can actually reduce tax rates in communities.
Could you foresee having strict ratios in place that would apply to all communities?
Yeah, I think we know that right now we have one paid staff member for every 4.67 students across the state. If we change that to one staff member for every 5.2, we might save $120 million. And we could give a benefit, an incentive to districts that right-sized down to the 1 to 5.2 level and still save taxpayers a bunch of money from the right-sizing of school districts in other areas.
So there are some people who want to repeal the spending threshold altogether. Do you think that's likely? Or one tweak that I hear is make some spending exemptions. For instance, exempt health care costs from the budget. And so what are your thoughts about that?
That is one of the proposals. We'll hear several next Wednesday. And one of them is to take the increases in health care costs off the table. Health care costs are eating us alive in this state, whether we're talking about Medicaid and the general fund or whether we're talking about property taxes and funding schools. So that is one proposal. We'll look at numerous proposals. Repealing it, I don't think, is in the realm of possibility. It was a broad-based bipartisan vote that voted in support of Act 46. And much of that support was based on the high spending thresholds that were in the bill. So to repeal them would be to pull the rug out from under people who wanted to see those thresholds in the bill.
Representative Sherman, what about this idea of changing the student-teacher ratio and tweaking the spending threshold provision? Does that do it for you?
Well, first of all, if I may, I just want to respond quickly to David's comments about my proposal. I just it has never really gotten a fair hearing and analysis, and we're not here to debate my proposal. Had it received a fair hearing and analysis, we'd have much more information, and I would argue that it is certainly closer to adhering to the Brigham decision than what passed in Act 46. So with that, I will say right-sizing staff from Montpelier is absolutely offensive to me. Again, we are having the state control more and more and more of our local decisions. They do not know. The people in the Agency of Education, the people in the legislature, do not know the needs of a place like Elmore or a place like Winooski or a place like Stowe. They do not know the needs the way our local community does. And to put this into some sort of formula that dictates from Montpelier what staff you can hire is offensive. It flies in the face of our long tradition of educational decisions at the local level. And I will just say, with regard to the high spending threshold, I think we're going to have some constitutional challenges come March, regardless of what we might – or not regardless, but if we don't do something in the legislature, we're probably going to have a constitutional challenge, and I believe it will be a win. When you have Danby – that under this law can spend up to $17,077 per pupil in fiscal year 2017 and not face any property tax penalties. And Irisburg, that if it were to spend that same amount per pupil, would pay a penalty of $842,699. I think that flies in the face of equity in the Brigham decision. So I think we absolutely have to address it, but I would argue we should be addressing this as a whole. I think there are many more problems to Act 46 than just the spending threshold. Again, I think we are resigned. We seem to be resigned to this position that we cannot move away from the statewide property tax. And I believe that while prior to 1997, it was a local community raising money for their local – responsible for their local budgets at the local level – the Brigham decision was the correct decision, that was unconstitutional. But if we put into place a more regional system where you are more connected, where taxpayers, again, are reconnected to their budgets and their money spent and reconnected to the outcomes achieved, I think that is the way you can go. We do not have to – the statewide property tax disconnects people ultimately from spending decisions. It's based upon our grant is based upon our per pupil grant from the state is based upon the spending of all statewide school spending. So our property taxes in our communities are a result and are dependent upon the votes in all of these other communities. I do not think that that by the heavy hand of the state coming down and saying who you can hire and how many teachers you can have is the way we should be addressing this. I think we should relook at the entire funding system.
Today in the program, we're looking at Act 46, the state's new school district consolidation law. When we come back, we're going to hear from a lot of local officials who would like to weigh in on this subject. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today, we're looking at Act 46, the state's new school district consolidation law. With us here today, House Education Chairman David Sharp and Stowe Representative Heidi Sherman. Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. One thing I wanted to raise with you, Representative Sharp, there are a lot of school boards who are working on their budgets right now, and they're looking to the legislature and saying, wow, are you going to change this or not? Their budgets are going to the printers at the end of January. Do you anticipate that if changes are made, they're going to come fast enough so it will affect the school budgets that will be voted on town meeting day?
I don't know the answer to that. I know that some school districts are putting together two budget options. Getting something out before those budgets go to print is highly unlikely. Having the governor sign a bill by the 15th of January, I think, is pretty impossible. Having something passed out of the House by town meeting day, I think, is highly likely. And so residents can make decisions on town meeting day based on the what we pass in the House. And this has been sort of tradition over the last number of years that the House has got a bill out before town meeting day so that local voters know what's coming down the pike.
Well, but that bill still would have to be reviewed by the Senate, and then there might be a conference committee. So are you putting school boards in a pretty awkward situation that they don't know what the rules of the game are, and they're basically going to pass a budget on town meeting day and may have to revisit all these issues again in 6 weeks or 8 weeks?
We are absolutely putting school board members and school boards in a difficult spot. There's no question about that. And I think that being on a school board is one of the most important and difficult public service positions in the state. And it's often not recognized or rewarded for the hard work that school board members put in. And but on the other hand, we have high spending in this state. We spend more per pupil than most any other state in the country. And although we have pretty good results for those dollars spent, we have got to curb our appetite for raising money for schools.
Joining us right now to discuss how this new law will affect schools in Montpelier is Steve Hinchin. He's a former member of the Vermont House who currently serves on the Montpelier School Board. Steve, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Bob, for having me. I appreciate the time to talk to you.
Sure. We're going to hear from a lot of local school officials today. So, Steve, based on Montpelier's current per pupil spending rate, the spending threshold for Montpelier would be just under 2% before the big penalty kicks in. So as the Montpelier School Board reviews this situation, how would the spending threshold impact your proposed budget for next year?
Yeah, our threshold hits in at 1.87% increase. Knowing that school boards across the state have to put in 7.9% for health care increases, we're left with virtually nothing to just meet other normal cost increases. The biggest driver besides health care is going to be just compensation under contracts for educators, for teachers. We were looking at this thing at a recent meeting, and we realized that we're really put in a really bad situation in terms of just trying to do the very minimal. For instance, if we were to include the healthcare increase that we have no choice about, and then we took just like a 1% increase for compensation, which is frankly below what is reasonably going to come out, we'd still be over that 1.87% threshold. In other words, we'd be spending about 54% over into penalty territory if we simply did a 1% increase in pay for our staff. And so, if we do more of a typical, like it was about 2 or 3%, now we're looking at blowing this thing. So we're looking at something like $340,000 over the threshold if we did sort of a standard, 2 or 3%. So it's really, I think we're in a position where we're going to have to move into this penalty territory or cut several teaching positions. That's really our choice. And what's sad about this is if we look at, we're in Washington County. If we were to look at the Washington County typical per pupil spending, we're near the bottom of the list. There's only one district, I believe, in Washington County that spends less per pupil than we do. So we're not some sort of high spending district. We're an efficient district. We're a model district in a lot of ways with a single school, school district, single town. We've got almost 1,000 students in our district. So we're doing everything right, we think. And yet we're in this situation where under the law passed, like Act 46, we're going to have to either reduce number of teachers or pay some pretty hefty penalties to the state.
Now, Steve, in central Vermont, there are 5 high schools within roughly 12 miles of Montpelier. We got Montpelier High School. We've got U32. We've got Spalding over in Barrie. There's Twinfield High School, Harwood Union High School. Does it make sense in your mind for these 5 high schools to offer duplicate courses to all their students? Instead of having 4 students in Montpelier's advanced French class and maybe 8 students at the U32 advanced French class, why don't we have 1 class with 12 students?
Well, first of all, let's set the record straight. We have extremely few classes that are like that. And they tend to be circumstantial from year to year. And so we have to, we don't necessarily want to throw out our system or change everything structurally for an occasional low class number. But they do exist occasionally. So then the question is, what kind of savings are you going to find from doing cooperation or unification? Our district has been very clear that we would like to explore unification with other districts. We've written letters to the neighboring districts and asked them if we could engage in study committees. So we're doing that. We don't really have a fundamental problem with exploring unification and even pursuing some cooperation short of that. Our concern is more with this 2% threshold. We think it's basically taking a chainsaw to a system where probably surgery would have been a better solution.
Steve Hinchin is a member of the Montpelier School Board. Steve, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you.
So, Representative Sharp, from the Montpelier perspective, it's going to be pay the penalty and keep the number of teachers and courses or cut staff. And would you argue, that's the decision that schools have to make?
Yes. And I would engage in a conversation with Steve asking him what their ratio is now, staff to student ratio. You know what's really exciting about Act 46 is that there, for decades there's been a conversation in this community and neighboring communities that U32 High School and Montpelier High School should be one high school. And this Act 46 is actually stimulating that conversation, not just here in Montpelier, but across the state. At first, people were upset, dug in their heels, threw up false claims about choice. And then secondly, we've seen a realization that there's actually some opportunities to do a better job for students if school boards came together and communities came together and explored the options available under Act 46. And it's not the heavy hand of Montpelier that Representative Sherman's bill is. It is instead encouraging local communities to come together for the appropriate solution for their communities. And they're doing that. And that's exciting, far, far quicker and in greater numbers than we expected, actually.
Let's go to our callers, and we'll get a thought from you in just a moment, Representative Sherman. Let's talk to Andrea, who is calling from Huntington. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I just wanted to correct a statement that was made that Huntington is bringing forth a vote because we looked at Bolton's success in the Triple M merger. That is not the reasoning. I am on the Huntington School Board, and our town has voted no twice to merging, once under a red system under Act 151 and Act 156 under a modified union. We are the town that voted no also. 50% turnout with a 2-to-1 vote, no. It's been a year. The Triple M union has started as of July 1st of this current year, and we have been watching how the merged union is operating. At the time of the vote the last time around, the citizens were happy with the supervisory union structure, and the board is interested in seeing if there has been a change in community attitude, but not specifically because they see a particular success story or advocate or endorse a merger. We are neither endorsing a merger, nor are we speaking out against a merger. We remain.
Andrea, thanks very much for your phone call. Want to get another perspective from a local area and talk to Gio Honickford, who is a member of the Royalton School Board, I believe, and vice president of the Vermont School Boards Association. Gio, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Bob.
So what are your thoughts, Gio, about the general approach that Act 46 is taking the state? Is it moving in the right direction?
Well, I think we need to put a student face on it. We talk an awful lot about money, and money certainly is important. But I think if you look at the start of the bill, Act 46, it talks about some of the goals it wants to achieve. It's looking to achieve equity, opportunity, quality of education, affordability. And when you look at those things, and then you look at what we're doing in Vermont in schools, and we're not achieving those things. We have schools that, middle schools that offer no language, middle schools that have no band, no art, they have no algebra, which are all sort of standard things now in middle school curriculum because they can't afford it. We have high schools with average class sizes of 6 for any class they're taking that offer no chemistry on any given year. They can't offer very much in extracurricular activities. So we're really failing students. When I say that, I don't want to imply that schools are failing, because they're not. When you look at our standardized test scores, Vermont does quite well. But what we could do for the money we're spending is staggering. We could be so much better if we were better with our money and provide a lot more for our students. I guess the challenge is designing a system on a statewide level that does achieve equity, opportunity, equality, and affordability. I think Act 46 is a step in the right direction, though imperfect, is going to give us the tools we need as boards to do something. Boards with 153 did nothing, by and large, across the state. If the legislature didn't act, the same situation would occur. Boards would sit back and say, well, I'm fine. Everybody else has a problem.
So is it your feeling that Act 46 will, in fact, expand educational opportunities in some of the state's smaller schools and that that's an important thing to do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In my particular area, we have about four very small high schools, and we're all struggling to provide the opportunities that we need to for our students. I mean, I spend the next half hour just talking about the ways we're not providing opportunities for our kids. If we were working together, we could provide those opportunities. I've been on the board for 11 years. I've spent almost all 11 years trying to bring the different schools together with no success. Now we're talking about coming together because Act 46 has encouraged that conversation. So there's no doubt in my mind that this will help student outcomes.
Geo Hunterford, many thanks for being on the program today.
You're welcome.
Today on Vermont Edition, we are looking at Act 46. Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We're looking at Act 46, the state's new school district consolidation law. With us today, Stowe Representative Heidi Sherman and also the House Education Chairman David Sharp. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Let's turn to Paulette, who is calling from Panton. Hi, Paulette. Welcome to the program.
Yes, hello. I live in Addison County, and we have three high schools within 15 minutes of each other in Vergennes, Bristol, and Middlebury with relatively small student populations. All three virtually offer the same programs, academic and extracurricular. And I just imagine the opportunities that we could offer students if we made each high school something like a magnet high school, one for science and technology, one for performing arts, one for humanities. I mean, think of how rich the opportunities would be for students if we could do that. So I'd just like to offer that as a suggestion.
Paulette, thank you very much. Representative Sherman, you talked about school choice early on in the program and your concerns that Act 46 will adversely affect school choice in towns that tuition their students. But wouldn't it be fair to say that that happened prior to Act 46? For instance, you represent Stowe. Mm-hmm. Stowe has a high school. Mm-hmm. So if I lived in Stowe, my child would need to go to Stowe High School because that's what you have. I don't have the opportunity in Stowe to decide that I want to send my child to a different high school.
That's true.
Right? And so if I understand Act 46, what they're saying is if you live in a community that has choice currently and you decide to merge with a community that has a high school, that now this combined merged district will have to decide. Do they want to keep the high school open, whereas everybody's going to go to the high school? Or do they want to close the high school and give everybody school choice? Now, if that's the case, if I'm accurate in that, how is Act 46 really restricting school choice?
Well, first of all, your assumption that there is a choice with regard to the merging is a false assumption. It's disingenuous at the very least. It is going to be required that they merge. These school choice districts are small districts. The preferred governance structure is 900 pupils, so they have to merge. If they don't, they have tax penalties. Or in 2018, the secretary and the state, again in Montpelier, has the authority to merge orphan districts. And the school boards at this time don't know whether or not an alternative structure that they propose would be approved. So it's a Sophie's choice. I'm sorry, but that's what it is. And it's disingenuous to say that these districts have an option. I think that if they merge into a district with a non with non-school choice, it's going to be, it has to be, because of equity provisions, as you said, they have to offer the same choice options, it will be eliminated. And again, these are long-standing traditions in these communities, and there are a lot of them, 90-plus communities. In some cases, proponents argue that you can merge districts with other like districts, with other school choice districts, and that that is true in some instances. Down in the Danby area, you could probably do that and come up with the number that you need to come up with. But most of these choice districts are geographically isolated, and they don't have the ability to merge into these larger districts. In fact, I think you'd have to take every 7 through 12 choice district and merge them in order to make the 900 pupil count. So I just think it's disingenuous to say that they have an option because it's a Sophie's choice.
Representative Sharp, along the same lines, we got this email from Heather in Lake Elmore, who writes that school choice towns are by nature small, rural, and geographically remote. A merge would likely need to happen with a non-choice town to make that student population goal. If that happens, school choice is gone. How do you respond to those concerns?
So the in many ways, the models put forward are preferred, and that's our goal. And we can get there in many areas of the state by merging like districts. And there's an option within the bill of having a supervisory union, keep the supervisory union structure, and have some schools, some communities with choice, and some communities that operate schools joined together in the fewest number of practical school districts. In fact, that's just been recently proposed for a large swath of the Connecticut River Valley. The options there are very flexible, and if it gets to the point of the secretary assigning or creating school districts, the secretary is prohibited, as the State Board of Education has prohibited in the bill specifically, from either discontinuing choice or discontinuing operating schools. I think you posed the question exactly right, Bob, when you had your first hypothetical conversation. This bill prohibits the elimination of choice or the closing of schools without local communities doing it on a voluntary basis.
Let's see if we can get a quick call in from John in Richmond. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Bob. It appears in listening to the conversation that, to a certain extent, the two legislatures are talking past each other, and that's just my opinion. And it would appear that in developing a program to address statewide education, you've got to understand the intricacies of each other's position. I'm wondering if the two legislators have been to either a merged district or been to these small choice districts so they can look at what's working, what isn't working. Because it would seem that's what we need in an overall policy, so we're not debating win-lose situations. This should be a win-win. We're not hearing anything about the student here. It's all about the present and very little bit about the future. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Sharp.
So I've traveled extensively in the summer and fall around the state. I've visited schools, large and small, and really exciting things are happening, both in choice districts and in operating school districts. Representative Olson has also, who is a proponent of choice, has also worked very hard in the southern part of the state in helping communities figure out who their he refers to them as dance partners. Who's your dance partner going to be? And how can we enhance student opportunities moving forward? That's the exciting part of this bill, in my opinion, is the conversation that's happening in communities across the state. Once you get past the hoopla and the digging in your heels part and actually sit down and say, how can we make a better school district for our students? And that conversation is happening, and it's exciting.
Representative Sherman, we've got less than a minute to go. Could this law be changed in the upcoming session to the point where you could support it?
I think I actually I've followed some of the debate going on in the gubernatorial campaign right now, and debates happening. I think Matt Dunn has proposed a solution to Act 46 that I certainly think is the right place to start. This arbitrary pupil number of 900, I don't understand where it came from. I still can't find a person to tell me where it came from or why 900 is the special number. I think the elimination of that, I think the spending cap, and also preserving the current school choice options.
Well, this is a discussion that will be going on for the next few months, and certainly the House Education Committee will begin its review of Act 46 next week. Many thanks to our guests today, Bristol Representative David Sharp and Stowe Representative Heidi Sherman. We really appreciate you coming by and talking to us about this.
You're welcome. Bob. Thanks for having us.
That's our program for today. Coming up on Monday, we'll talk with a financial coach who helps low-income Vermonters. We'll discuss what advice, support, and strategies are the most helpful for those who are struggling financially. Send your questions or comments to VermontEdition@vpr.net and listen Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sangari and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Hannah Kearns. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.